federal firearms legislation. Following the assassination of President Kennedy, there has been a rash of demands for more stringent federal firearms control, and many gun control bills are before the present Congress. All of the proposals ignore constitutional prohibitions against federal firearms control. They ignore the profoundly important principle of liberty involved in that article of the Bill of Rights, which orders the federal government not to infringe the right of the people to keep and bear arms. They ignore the fact that existing federal legislation in this field has failed to accomplish its stated purpose. They ignore the fact that stringent gun control laws, while harassing and abridging the rights of law-abiding citizens, do not prevent criminals from getting deadly weapons. The public should demand that Congress reject all proposed firearms legislation and that it repeal existing laws in this field. That is a summary of my report on federal firearms legislation. The full report after a message from my sponsor. The assassination of President Kennedy precipitated a rash of demands for more stringent federal firearms control. The National Firearms Act of 1934 and the Federal Firearms Act of 1938 contain practically all prohibitions which most advocates of more federal laws in the field claim to want. How much good have these old federal laws accomplished? None. Mr. John Schooley, who has had 30 years' experience as the head of a large metropolitan police department and as a sheriff, testifies, quote, "In my many years of law enforcement, I cannot recall one case where the provisions of the Federal Firearms Act prevented one criminal from securing a firearm, nor can I recall one instance when a crime was prevented by the provisions of the Act. At the same time, you will find that many honest citizens have been unnecessarily harassed by the terms of our federal firearms legislation already in effect. Such legislation does nothing more than curtail the ownership of firearms by law-abiding citizens. The criminal can never be denied the tools of his profession by legislation directed at the tool and not at him," end quote. Statistics from FBI uniform crime reports on the kinds of tools used in aggravated assaults reveal that guns are used in 12.7% of the cases. Objects suitable for cutting or stabbing in 44%, blunt objects 24%, personal weapons, hands, fists, feet, 12.3%. Poisons, acids, and other weapons are used in the remaining 7% of all reported cases of aggravated assault. If the advocates of gun control laws really think they can eliminate crimes of violence by outlawing weapons used in such crimes, what do they propose to do about human hands, feet, teeth, knees, and heads, not to mention kitchen utensils, razor blades, broken bottles, ice picks, and so on? Much of the current agitation for stringent anti-gun laws implies that the murder of President Kennedy was possible because Dallas, in particular, and Texas in general, have no effective gun control laws. It is a fact that Texans are not required to license or register their guns, though it is illegal for criminals to possess guns. New York, on the other hand, has very restrictive gun control laws. In 1963, 548 murders were committed in New York City, 113 in Dallas. There were more murders last year in New York City alone than in the entire state of Texas. Today we have more restrictive firearms regulations than ever before, and today there are more crimes of violence, more in actual number and more in proportion to the total population than ever before. This is not coincidental, it is inevitable. Criminal violence against law-abiding citizens will always increase as citizens are restricted in their right to defend themselves. A free man must have unrestricted right to own and use personal weapons in the defense of his family, his home, and his own person against any kind of marauder, whether the marauder be a soldier of an invading army, an agent of an internal political conspiracy, or a common criminal. It is probably no exaggeration to say that an American citizenry, well armed with personal firearms and possessing the knowledge to use them effectively and properly, would provide more defense against invasion by a foreign enemy or against internal attempt to seize power than all of the national defense which President Johnson plans to buy with $51.2 billion tax dollars in the next fiscal year. The early history of our nation tends to prove this assertion, and the example of Switzerland confirms it. Our forefathers believed that a citizen's right to keep and bear arms free from federal restriction was basic and inalienable. Indeed, this right is so fundamental to freedom that tyranny must follow if it is abrogated. It is suicidal to require the registration of the weapons of citizens in a free country. France had such a law before the Second World War. The Nazis confiscated the records and the weapons, making effective resistance impossible until the British and Americans smuggled weapons in. It was a firearms registration and control law which enabled communists to disarm Czechoslovakian patriots, and thus make the patriots of that country helpless when the communists decided to take over. Many Americans remember the impassioned pleas of the British for personal firearms to defend their homes and families in 1940, when a Nazi invasion of England seemed imminent. The British had been disarmed by their own government with severe firearms control legislation. Many Americans also remember that when our armies overran Europe toward the end of World War II, we confiscated and used, wherever possible, the records of people who had been forced by their own governments to register their firearms. In 1939 and 1940, Finland, with a population of only 4 million but with an unusually large number of trained riflemen, was able to resist and humiliate the mammoth armies of the USSR, whose population totaled about 170 million. Why was Sergeant Alvin York so effective in World War I? Because Alvin York had grown up in a free part of the world where a good rifle was a more important part of a man's personal equipment than shoes were. In May 1919, a group of Allied intelligence officers raided the headquarters of a revolutionary group in Dusseldorf, Germany. One document which they seized was entitled Rules for Bringing About a Revolution. One of the three basic rules: caused the registration of all firearms on some pretext, with a view to confiscating them and leaving the population helpless. In the light of such publicly known facts and the experience of many nations, any proposal for any kind of federal firearms control legislation must at least be stupidly conceived. Some current proposals appear to be worse than stupid. Shortly after the assassination of President Kennedy, Dr. Edward Condon, former head of the National Bureau of Standards, presently a professor at the University of Colorado, wrote to Attorney General Robert Kennedy demanding federal firearms legislation which would require police to register and keep all privately owned firearms, letting owners obtain their guns only for specified purposes and for short durations of time, and requiring the owners, while in possession of their guns, to wear easily visible identification. Dr. Condon also demanded that something be done about training in the U.S. Armed Forces because, he said, Lee Harvey Oswald was thoroughly skilled in the art of killing while in the Marine Corps. On February 11, 1964, the National Council of Churches reprinted a statement by Alfred Hassler, Executive Secretary of the Fellowship of Reconciliation, an extremist pacifist organization. Hassler alleged that in the United States, there is a widespread acceptance of violence, including murder, as a valid instrument for achieving ends believed to be important. Hassler wants abolition of all means of violence, including our armed forces. Internationalists who demand national disarmament are among those demanding federal firearms laws to disarm the citizenry. But American patriots who love God and their country know that the major threat to the peace and happiness of the people of the United States is the drive toward world order under a world authority, which will come immediately after the disarmament of individuals and nations who believe in freedom and independence. A large number of gun control bills have been introduced in the present Congress. The one which the Department of Justice favors, and which is likely to be given the most serious consideration by Congress, is sponsored by Senator Thomas J. Dodd. Dodd introduced the bill on August 2, 1963, to impose federal controls on the interstate shipment of mail-order pistols. Following the assassination of President Kennedy, Dodd has twice amended his bill until it has become virtually a federal firearms registration bill for all kinds of guns moving in interstate commerce, giving the Secretary of the Treasury dictatorial powers over the sale and distribution of all kinds of guns. The Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States says that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. This is an absolute prohibition against any kind of federal firearms law, since any such law clearly infringes upon the specified right of the people. The two unconstitutional laws already on the federal statute books are a constant temptation for further illegal federal action in this field and have done positively no good at all. So the American public should demand not only that Congress reject the Dodd Bill and all other proposed federal firearms legislation, but should also demand that Congress repeal the two federal laws already in existence, the National Firearms Act of 1934 and the Federal Firearms Act of 1938. Unless we wipe off the books the unconstitutional legislation that is already there and resist further efforts to put unconstitutional laws on the statute books, we cannot reestablish constitutional government in the United States. I am Dan Smoot. Goodbye. God bless you.